All right, welcome back to the Veterans Club Podcast. This is your host today, Jeffrey Rosales, alongside my amazing co-hosts, Miss Lakeisha Mosley, Kat Corchado, and Joe Palacios. Today we have a very special guest, one who served the United States Marine Corps for over 44 years. He is the 37th Commandant and retired General Robert Neller. Let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there's only been 39 Commandants in the history of the Marine Corps, and we have 37 today. General Neller is a native of East Lansing, Michigan. He graduated from the University of Virginia and was commissioned in 1975. He served as an infantry officer at all levels, including command of Marine Security Force Company during Operation Just Cause and Operation Promote Liberty. He was also in charge of 3rd Light Armored Infantry Battalion during Operation Restore Hope, 6th Marine Regiment, and 3rd Marine Division. He also served as the Deputy Commanding General of 1st Marine Expeditionary Force during Operation Iraqi Freedom 2005-2007. He was the Assistant Division Commander for 1st and 2nd Marine Divisions and President of Marine Corps University. His joint assignments include service in the Policy Division of Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers, Europe, and Castel Benjum, and as Director of Operations of the Joint Staff in Washington, D.C. And he's a proven transformational leader and a change agent. He's an effective thought leader and communication specialist on managing change in complex and rapidly evolving environments. He has a wealth of experience in day-to-day operation of complex multi-billion dollar operating units to include developing, executing strategies, assessing risk, and continual resource management and investments. He's a tested leader who has operated at the highest levels of national leadership with extensive problem training and solving skills deployed successfully under stressful conditions and within heightened risk environments. He also sits on a number of boards to include the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation, which we'll talk about later. He also provides corporate consulting services and does speaking engagements to motivate, inspire, and transform organizations. Semper Fi. Welcome, General Neller, to the Veterans Club.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here with you guys today and hope you had a good, I don't want to say happy Veterans Day because I'm not sure that's, but hope you all had a good Veterans Day. And for those Marines out there, happy Marine Corps birthday.
Hoorah, Semper Fi. Thank you so much, General. So I'd like to take it back to East Lansing. I'd like to know a little bit more about your background before you joined the Corps. What was that like?
My dad built houses and my mom helped him with that business and they were reasonably successful. So, I mean, I had a pretty easy life as a kid. I didn't want for anything material. My dad was a pretty tough guy, he was in the Army during the Korean War, although he didn't go to Korea. And I was born at what used to be known as Fort Polk, Camp Polk, Louisiana, and then they moved back to their hometown. So, went to elementary school, high school, and, played sports and was slightly above the fleet average as a student. And somehow I got in the University of Virginia. So, got into UVA. I'm pretty sure at the end of the day, they probably had some people choose other schools, and I was in the pile of player to be named later, and somehow I got picked. So got a great education there. I was fortunate enough that my parents were able to fund that, and I worked and did all my stuff in the summer to go there. Always had a job mowing grass and working on a golf course, worked in an oil field one summer, and but graduated, and I needed a job. So one day my college roommate and I are walking through the student union. There's this guy standing there in dress blue trousers and a khaki shirt, convinced us that we could be lawyers in the Marine Corps, which is what we want to do. We wanted to be attorneys. So we went to OCS. And then as my late father-in-law used to say, life is what happens when you're planning other stuff. I didn't get into law school I wanted to get into, and my parents were getting divorced and I didn't have any money and I wanted to get married. And the Marine Corps said, we'll make you a second lieutenant. And so my plan was to marry this girl that I'm still married to. We'll be married 50 years next August. And I was going to be a Marine for 3 years. That was the plan. And I didn't have a plan beyond that. I was going to do 3 years, get out and do something, maybe go back, maybe try to get into law school. But, you know, three turned into six and one child, and six turned into 10 and three children, and 10 turned into 20 and 20 turned into 30 and 30 turned into 40. And then the last 4 years, you know, I had the honor and privilege of serving as the commandant of the Marine Corps. So no complaints. You know, and we all wish we had some do-overs. I was fortunate the woman I married liked the life. She was willing to move around and allowed me to do what I needed to do to be a Marine. And, you know, like everybody else, I tried to do as good a job as I could. Was fortunate I work with a bunch of really good people. And so here we are, 5 years retired.
Sir, if you don't mind, as growing up, sounds like you didn't have any, like, was there ever service in your idea? Like, did you ever have the idea as you were growing up before you met those, before you saw the Marines in their probably their deltas, right? Their recruiting. Before that time, was there any, like, call to service for you? Did you think that you would be in uniform prior to?
I think everybody, my dad was in the Army. His brother was a Navy pilot. There were people in the neighborhood that had served. There was a retired Army colonel lived down the street. The guys that worked with my dad were all World War II guys. You know, so, you know, and on TV, there were shows that, you know, that glorified service, all sorts of shows about the military. You don't have that anymore. I mean, you got Navy SEALs, but I mean, there were shows about the Army in Europe and you know, comic books about, you know, World War II. And, you know, I read history. I enjoyed history. So, yeah, I mean, I was interested.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, then when I went to college, I don't know why. I was always interested, but, you know, my brother ended up going to the Naval Academy. But, you know, I remember it was a different time. You know, Vietnam was going on. I remember in high school, I went to the Air Force Academy recruiting thing at my high school, and there was a sit-in against the war in Vietnam at the high school, peaceful. But the Air Force Academy recruiter wasn't able to make their pitch. And so I don't, you know, nobody came up to me and said, to include my parents, like, hey, have you thought about applying to, you know, applying to go to West Point or Navy, Annapolis, or the Air Force Academy or Coast Guard Academy. I probably would have been interested, but I just didn't cross my mind. And it was just a different time. You know, it wasn't a time when people came up to you at the airport and said, thank you for your service in your uniform.
Yeah.
You know, people, I mean, even after I got commissioned in 75, people would, you were in uniform, people would belittle you and accuse you of doing stuff and all that. So, it, you know, the times change, you know, 9/11 changed all that. Yeah. I tell all active duty today, and I mean the vets today, you know, people say, thank you for your service. Don't ever take that for granted, because it didn't used to be that way. But to answer your question, no, it wasn't because I wasn't interested. It wasn't because it wasn't around. I think, it's like anything else. You know, why did you join the Marine Corps? Somebody said, hey, I think you'd be a good Marine. Why did you join the Air Force? Why did you join the Air Force? Because somebody asked you. I mean, why do people re-enlist if they're in? Because somebody came up to them and said, hey, you're really good at this. I like being a Marine with you. Why don't you stay? And, but so nobody asked me. And so, you know, when you're young, you're in high school, I mean, what do you know?
That reminds me, sir, and this will be my last question, and let everybody else jump in. This reminds me of one of your talks you were talking about, and it makes sense. Like, you joined, you finally were, you saw that, like, at the time where you're at, when you were going, there was no push. I mean, you didn't see recruiters out there. They didn't have the cool recruiting videos. Like, when I joined, man, we had that, and probably the same with Jeffrey. We really got to see, like, interesting stuff to be in the military, right? When I joined, there was a really great marketing recruiting where they did the cool sword, and they really kind of emphasized kind of like that knight-like warrior, right? Like a Marines have always been warriors. And I think what drew me to it was the fact that it was the honor, courage, commitment type of warrior. I think there's always this misconception about Marines, and I don't know how you feel on this, that we're mindless war savages. But I think we hold ourselves to a higher standard. I think a lot of times Marines are those knight-like warriors, right? I think General Mattis, his quote, right? No better friend, no worse enemy. And I really think that Marines hold that true throughout the times that we've been in.
Well, you remember now, back then, there was no all-volunteer force. They didn't have to recruit. It was a draft. Yeah. People were drafted in the service, which was incredibly unpopular during the Vietnam War because people were allowed to get deferments for things. I remember going down, my dad taking me to the draft board. I had to go down and register. I remember my first year at UVA. We all sat around the radio and listened to the draft numbers being called. I think my number was, I was like 135. And, you know, people, you know, the war was incredibly unpopular, even though, but, you know, back to your points about Marines, you know, I don't think the Marine Corps got the market cornered on being a warrior. And, you know, I think all the services have really hard jobs. And, I mean, being on a ship, I think that's incredibly difficult because, you know, if things go bad, I mean, you're out in the middle of deep blue sea and like nobody's going to come and get you. I like being on the ground. So at least I have some control over my destiny. But so I think all the services, the values, the culture is all the same. They all, you know, see themselves properly as warriors and that, you know, they're, it's this thing doesn't work. Our military doesn't work if we're not all into the honor, courage, and commitment culture. And we understand that this is not about you. It's about the team. Everything's about the team. Now, you could, you know, you might believe because of your experience that the Marine Corps does a better job of doing that. But I think if I got the Sergeant Major of the Army up here or the Chief Petty Officer of the Navy up here or the Chief Senior Master Sergeant of the Air Force, they would beg to differ. That's just kind of the culture that we grew up in. And for the most part, the people that we hung out with shared those same values, which is why it works.
Powerful. Thank you, Joe. Kat or Lakeisha?
Yes. You know, one thing about your story and everything that you have done, 44 years, you know, you eat the highs and the lows, right? And, you know, you still believe that the Marines is a great place to be at. So my question to you is, what are the challenges that you have expressed in the Marines that you can show others that they can actually build and they can do something different and how they can look at the military differently for themselves?
Well, you all know that this isn't for everybody. I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's not like you can wake up in the morning and go, yeah, I think I was calling sick. I'm tired. I had a little too much fun last night. I don't feel like showing up. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. So, you know, we're and not to sound like we're exclusive or better than anybody else, but, you know, there's 2 million people plus or minus in the armed force of the United States to include the Guard and Reserve out of a population of 350 million people. So what's that? Less than 1%. So, you know, and it's a recruited force. I mean, it's a volunteer force, but, you know, as Joe said, we're a recruited force. And we spend a lot of money on that. So it's not for everybody. But I do believe that for a lot of young men and women who are kind of figure out what they want to do, they probably think they're not really ready to go to college because they don't want to waste the money. And maybe they just need 4 years to go do something to kind of grow up a little bit and find themselves and do a little bit of travel and learn something. I mean, my pitch always was, hey, look, I don't care if you, 4 years is fine. Do your 4 years. get your honorable discharge, and then you got a full ride scholarship in your pocket. You got full ride to any state university in your home of record. Or with a yellow ribbon program, if you can get in, I mean, you can go to Harvard for like 25% of the tuition. So it's all about creating opportunity for yourself. And for veterans, I mean, I talk to people in business, like I was on a board meeting, I said, you know, we need to look for veterans because veterans make great employees. Because generally, you know, they're sober, they're going to show up on time, they're trainable, they understand mission, they understand focus, they're going to work hard, and you're going to get your money's worth out of them. So you should hire them. And I think most businesses see that. I think there's a huge advantage to being a veteran today. If you're, you know, you got your stuff together, there's all sorts of opportunities out there. And you got to be able to bring those same qualities that allowed you to be successful in your military service to the civilian side. And you will succeed. You will succeed. You will be competitive, and you know, you can get educated. I mean, we do a lot of training in the military. I don't think people realize ourselves how much training and education we get when we're on active duty. So it's a great opportunity, but again, you got to do it because you want to do it, because it's not, I mean, that's going to be, I mean, you all know there's some days, I mean, it's hard. Some days harder than others. But you know, you got to show up. You got to show up. So, I mean, for me, I mean, you know, you could sit here and say, I gave 110% every day. I don't know anybody that gives 110% every day. I mean, some days all you got is 80. And okay, I'll take 80. But you were there. You got to show up. I think in the Marine Corps, there's 14 leadership traits and principles. Interestingly enough, discipline is not one of them. I think discipline is kind of the base for all the services. I mean, if you're not disciplined, you're going to have personally, individually disciplined in how you run your life and how you manage yourself. You're going to have a hard time in the military. Because, you know, after recruit training, entry-level training, leaders don't have time to be chasing you around the house. I mean, making sure you do stuff. You got to do it on your own. Nobody's going to come and wake you up in the morning like the drill instructor. You get up. Do your job. Got a little feedback there.
This is great. You know, honestly, I feel like the military, honestly, if you didn't know how to become an adult, you learn that in the military. And I feel that Marines has truly showed you, you know, I wasn't in the Marines, I was in the Army and Air Force, but it showed me how to grow and build and transition, understand what life really was. So thank you so much for that answer. I appreciate that, General. Thank you.
Kat?
My question is, your career is very long, so you saw a lot of changes and transitions throughout not only the Marine Corps, but throughout all the services. How did your command, or how you commanded as a leader, did it change when women started coming into the military?
No, that's a great question. I mean, I was in the infantry, so I never saw female Marines. I mean, very, very rarely. I don't think I really saw them in a training or operational environment until I was probably when I went to Somalia as a battalion commander. There were no women in our organization because it was an infantry regiment. And at that time, women were excluded by policy from serving in those units. But there were women in some of the combat service support units in the Army that did support for us. And then later as a regimental commander, you know, out of training out at, say, 29 Palms, California, there were women in the logistics group, and there are women doing different things. And then as a division commander, I mean, in Iraq, they saw women. And, you know, did it? No, women are Marines. I mean, they're not women, they're Marines. There's a famous story that somebody asked the commandant back in World War II that they were going to have women Marines in World War II. He says, what are you going to call them? He goes, Marines. I'm going to call them Marines. They're Marines. So I think there may be some discomfort. I think you have to be aware of, you know, different issues. My wife actually helped me a lot, kind of get my mind around certain changes that took place in the military over the course of our time. But, you know, I think you have to be aware of how different things affect different groups of people in different ways. But, you know, the military, when I came in the military, it was right then, I was at the end of Vietnam, and it was the beginning of the all-volunteer force, and it was horrible. I mean, it was like 50% high school grads. We had huge racial issues. We had huge drug issues. Quite frankly, the number of my friends that are retired now, like me, I don't know why we stayed. Maybe we believed, maybe we drank the Kool-Aid and we believed that, you know, that we could fix it, that the idea of a Marine Corps was worthy of our effort. And then, you know, over time, things got better. We had different standards. We started doing urine analysis for drug use. We raised the standard, and then we got better, more capable people. You know, General Wilson was a commandant. He said, okay, we're going to have 75% high school grads. And everyone went, oh my God, there's no way we can recruit to that. And then we did that. And then the next commandant, General Barrow, said, we're going to do 90% high school grads. And now it's 99.99, whatever it is, high school grads. Because there's a direct correlation between being able to get a high school diploma and being able to complete your enlistment. It's about getting stuff done, following through, doing your job. And, you know, and then the changes with the, you know, don't ask, don't tell, and women and unrestricted based only on standards. I mean, you know, I learned this in Iraq. I mean, I saw all sorts of people. We were there in Anbar province with like 34,000 to 35,000 soldiers and Marines and sailors and a few airmen. And I saw people do incredibly courageous things. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to this. There were two types of people there. Those that could and those that couldn't. And when you're getting shot at, nobody really gives a damn if you're gay, straight, black, white, man, woman, Hispanic, Asian. Nobody cares. They just care that if I get shot and I'm out in the middle of the street, you're going to come get my ass. That's all they care about. And if that's you, then we're all good. So it takes all kinds. America's a great, diverse, wonderful place. Mm-hmm. And we all came, unless you're a Native American, we all came from somewhere else. We're all immigrants to this place. Is this experiment we call democracy. So to answer your question, you know, I think I had to be more witting and aware. I've talked to a lot of women Marines, and I don't think I had at the beginning of my career, I don't think I had as good a sense of some of the things that they had to go through to be able to serve as Marines, which I found troubling when they would tell me their stories. But, you know, just want to do your job. Let people do their job.
Absolutely. Just to piggyback on what you said, I think that, you know, people who stayed in the military wanted to be part of something that was bigger than themselves. When you have this team concept of we're all in this together. And also the question that Lakeisha and you had talked about, I think one of the things that the military taught me was how to rely on myself. And you either rely on yourself and you stay in the military, or you don't and you get kicked out, one or the other. So I think it taught me strength of relying on myself more and trusting myself, trusting my gut instinct and everything. So thank you for that answer.
Well, I mean, leaders are my job as a leader is to help you be successful. That's my job. After my first tour in 3rd Marine Division, I went to Marine Recruit Depot San Diego, where we trained recruits, and it was 1977. And as I mentioned, the quality of the recruit was not that great, but we were making Marines. And I learned, watching the drill instructors, the ones that were most effective is, I can make anybody quit. I can make any of you quit. If I harass you, if I dog you out, I get on your case, I tell you you're no good, you'll quit eventually. But I mean, what purpose? I mean, what, there's no honor there. The real virtue in a leader is, if you doubt yourself or you're not sure or you're lack, we all question ourselves all the time. If I can make you believe, yeah, you can do that. I know you can do that. So go do it. Now, at the end of the day, like you said, it's on you. But man, as a leader, I have to be there, you know, to give you encouragement to a point. Then when you don't need encouragement anymore, you create an expectation like, okay, I don't need to go there. And you just say, I got this done. Okay. All right. Good job. Thanks. But I knew that, but thank you for telling me, as opposed to, you know, watching your every move. I mean, it's all about, you know, leaders don't have, you know, if you're in a good organization, everybody does what they're supposed to do. And the leaders can just kind of sit around and go watch and enjoy the view. Unfortunately, that's not always the case, but in a good unit, that's what happens. People do what they're supposed to do because they know they're supposed to do it, and they do it without being told, and life is good.
I like that, sir. I think you, in one of your interviews, I heard you say something about the short-term is a leader. They're not if you're the smartest person in the room, then you're probably in the wrong room. And you didn't say it that way, but it was kind of that way. And what it reminded me of is, and you brought them up earlier, the leadership principles, right? Know yourself and seek self-improvement. I think a lot of people used to think that that means that you have to know everything. And what I like about what we were taught in the Marine Corps about the teamwork is that it's a team effort, and know your team. Know yourself, but you also know your team. So if my self-improvement could be realizing that, you know, Lance Corporal Huck is way better at land navigation. And what made me think of this was the story you told about being a lieutenant, never being lost. And I love that story that you told about relying on the team around you and the personnel that were already there. One specifically I think you mentioned was a Sergeant Bacon, and he allowed you to never be lost. And when you shared that, what resonated with me as well was that I had staff NCOs that used to teach me the same thing. He's going to say, you're going to hear people talk about how their lieutenant can't do this and their lieutenant can't do that. He says, no one should ever talk about your platoon commander or your officer that they can't do something. He goes, because if they're saying that, then we as staff NCO that are there to help are failing as well. So I love that team effort, sir. Could you elaborate a little bit more on that relationship between officer and enlisted advisor? Like the guys that work together.
Well, that was my very first unit. It was 2nd Platoon, Lima Company, 3rd Battalion, 4th Marines. And the platoon sergeant was a guy named Joe Houle, who retired as a sergeant major. And he'd been in Vietnam, had gotten out, and then came back in the Marine Corps. And then in 2.5 years, made staff sergeant. Very experienced guy, very mature. And we had 3 squad leaders. Sergeant Bacon, Sergeant Douglas, and I'm trying to think of the corporal's name. And all good men. I'd say they were trained, but I don't know how educated they were. But Sergeant Bacon was a very quiet, God-fearing guy, incredibly fit. And I learned very quickly that he could, for whatever reason, he just was a savant for land nav. And so whenever we would be in some, you know, down in the bottom of some gully and can't see the sun and looking at the 1 to 50,000 map with 40 meter contour intervals. And I'm like, okay, you know, Sarnbacken, where do you think we are? And he would tell me, and I go, yeah, that's exactly what I thought. but I mean, I was close, but he was, and he never failed to find the spot. And so I think there's a partnership. I think good staff NCOs realize that the lieutenant might have more education and maybe a little bit more training, but not the experience. And their job is to round that officer out and help them understand the kind of the nuances of leadership and the different people and the way things are supposed to go. And so, I mean, I've had some really great staff NCOs, and I've had some others that were, you know, okay. But if you're fortunate enough, like I was, for, you know, to pretty much have a great group of people that are your senior enlisted, and they're going to come in and tell you stuff that's like, tell you the truth. Like when you do something stupid, and then, you know, help you fix it or get yourself out from under behind that. Because, I mean, when you make a mistake, everybody knows you made a mistake, especially in a small unit. Everybody knows. So just own it. Say, I screwed up. Because if you don't, everybody go, yeah, okay, I can deal with that. Lieutenant screwed up. He got lost or made a mistake or did this or lost. You know, it's not, it's business. So I the relationship, I mean, in any organization, I mean, I think the boss, whoever the boss is, you know, you've got people that work with you, and it's, even though they may be subordinate in rank, they may be superior in experience and knowledge and understanding about things that you don't know about. So it's, you know, doesn't ever hurt to ask, like, hey, anybody got any thoughts on this? Now, whether people will tell you that, I mean, don't ask that if you don't want to hear it. I know a lot of people that might say, hey, anybody got anything they want to say about this? And nobody will say anything because they know that their thoughts might not be considered, you know, the way that the offer was made. So if you don't want to hear what people have to say, don't ask. I do. I did. Because it's all about getting better, right?
Powerful. General, who were some of your mentors that helped advise you in your very successful career that might have shown you a few things to kind of direct you, right? And the Marine Corps has this roadmap that they put for the enlisted and the officer side. Were there any folks that you kind of relied on for that guidance as you climbed up in the ranks?
You want names?
Or just general, yeah, anyone in general.
You know, I mean, your peers are all part of your mentors. So, I mean, I had a group of guys I served with for like 20 plus years, and we would talk, and I trusted them to tell me stuff, and I think they trusted me to tell them stuff. And, you know, there were five lieutenants in that first company, Lima Company, and two made general and two retired as colonels. All great Marines, and we stayed in touch over the years. And I knew if I had a problem or I had a question, or we would ask each other, like if somebody had been to a place and like gone to a training area and they'd been there, you know, hey, what happened? Can you know, we'd share stuff. And that happened. I think your peers, you know, you rely on your peers. And I've had senior officers that were general officers, you know, give you advice if you listen, if you're willing. And sometimes, you know, on rare occasions, you would watch people do stuff, which was an example of, you know, how maybe you didn't want to do stuff. But, you know, I was fortunate. I made my share of mistakes. I think for the most part, they were forgivable mistakes. Some mistakes are not forgivable. And I had people that, you know, were different styles of leaders, different kinds of leaders. Some were very outgoing, very positive, enthusiastic. Some were more quiet or stoic. Some were hard, kind of yellers, screamers. And so you, and over a period of time, you kind of develop your own style and how you want to do that. But I think it was, I was fortunate, and that I had people that were, you know, were willing to come to me and or give me good advice or set good examples or give me good techniques or procedures or things to follow that I adopted. And you know, it ended up the way it ended up. I mean, it's to get promoted at a certain point. I mean, it's the people in the room, for whatever reason, pick you and not somebody else. You're probably not any more qualified than 10, 15 people that are sitting there being considered. It's as simple as that, at least in the Marine Corps.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. I think mentorship is a very valuable tool, both inside the military and outside, especially in the business world. So the Marine Corps is very known for having a great leadership development program, not to say the other services don't. And I know that's something we emphasize a lot, so that's why I asked that question. Let's talk about some of your challenges that you might have encountered, and maybe what's a lesson learned that we can take away either in business or in our personal lives that you want to share?
You know, we all try to do self-analysis, and we look at ourselves and what we need to do better. I was always the person that was questioning everything, and I'm sure my bosses considered me at some point, and I know because they told me this, that I was annoying, that I always challenged everything, and like at some point, you know, just shut up and do it. And looking back at it now, I didn't do it to be difficult. I did it because I had this, I wanted us to be better. But you know, you can talk about it all day long. At some point, somebody's got to make a decision, and then you got to carry it forward as if it's your own idea. And you can't go out in formation and tell, you know, your unit, well, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, and I try to not make us do it, but this is what they decided. The proverbial they made us. You can't do that. That's unprofessional. So I think for me, I needed to work on being a better follower. You got to have good leaders. You got to have good followers. If you're a good leader and you got bad followers, nothing's going to work. You got to have both. And how do you become a good follower? There's a way, I call it principled dissent. You can disagree and then you can make your case, but if you don't get your way, like, okay, we're done. Go forth and fit and make this thing work the way you've been directed to make it work. And I mean, unless it's immoral, illegal, or unethical, shouldn't be a problem. And I think just listening, letting people finish their thoughts. I needed to work on that. Talk less, listen more. That's the thing I struggled with, and I worked hard to try to be better at. Be a better listener. Because people will tell you, if you ask them, you learn a lot just by listening to what people are saying.
That's a thank you for sharing that. I think that's one of the very hard challenge for a lot of folks, especially when they're leading or commanding organizations, is you want to get all this input. And you, at the end of the day, you have to be the decision maker and make the decision, right? You get all this information, but that says a lot about your leadership, especially being a servant leader. That's what it sounds like you were or still are here in the course. I appreciate you sharing that. Anyone else on the team have a question?
Yeah, I did. What resonated with me on that, sir, is I think there's a misconception that the officer side doesn't recognize when it's something ridiculous, or it's busy work, or it's something. And I think there's this misconception that they haven't already said, maybe we should do it this way, or maybe we should do it that way. And when I had junior Marines, I really trying to resonate that leadership that you were saying. It's like try to cover as much as I can if it's ridiculous. But it took a while to recognize the right tact and bearing to do that. And I think of one of my squad leaders, it was a Sergeant Martin. I got thrown into his squad. They were doing the annual rifle squad competition. It was in 93. And one of the best things he ever said was, he's like, explain when you can, and then make them follow through when you can't. And he goes, if you are transparent in those things, you will have Marines that go, hey, that so-and-so, he never makes us do anything that's not important or necessary. And I think what that developed was a lot of people to recognize, let's just do the work. And the other thing I was told is never complain about something or say this is dumb if you don't have an alternative plan that can be executed, and to be able to explain that. So thank you for sharing that. That was actually something that resonated. And I think I just wanted to touch base on that. Thank you, sir.
I think a misconception in the military, and you can comment us on your own experience, is that people just stand up and say, we're going to do X, and everybody just turns, you know, faces right and marches off smartly and does it. That's not the way it is. I mean, every plan, every new idea, every change is discussed, and it's dissected, it's analyzed, it's looked at, and then you got to figure out how you're going to present it. Now, if you're getting shot at and the commander's like, hey, go there and kill that guy. Okay, well, there's not a whole lot of discussion. But, you know, we might come up with a couple, go right, go left, go up the middle. But for anything else, I mean, you want everybody on side. You want, it's hard to make a big change in an organization if you haven't done the groundwork to get it ready to go and to prepare people emotionally, physically, mentally for the change. And you know, and so there's any organization, but to include our military, good leaders do that. They go out of their way and they go around explaining, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is why we're going to do it. And here's why I think this is a good idea. And people can then talk about it. And most people will say, yeah, okay, fine. I got it. There'll be a few that are like, no, I think this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. But still going to do it. But you're the advantage of that is you're going to get more people on side. So your probability of success, once you decide, you say go, is going to go up. I mean, that's even an op order in how you deliver it, how you talk about it, how you present it. It's critical, and good leaders are able to do that well.
I think that's very powerful what you just said, because it sounds like to me what you're saying is always tell them why they're doing it, right? One of the things that I always hated, especially, was when folks didn't keep informed. And we always talked about always keep the troops informed, tell them why they're doing it. And especially if you can involve them in a decision-making process, you get their buy-in. I think the outcome or the probability of that mission or, you know, business goal is going to be achieved. It's going to be a lot higher if you include them in that process.
Yeah, I mean, some things come down from the top, and then some things, you know, change comes from different directions. They come from laterally, they come from the bottom up. And if somebody's got good ideas are non-denominational, right? If there's a good idea, like, okay, let's take a look at this. And I'll give you an example. So we had a policy about tuition assistance in the Marine Corps. We didn't let a Marine use tuition assistance until they'd been in for 2 years. The other services had a shorter period of time. And so we had the Sergeant Majors get together once a year for a symposium, and we're in there and I talked to them, and then we're in a questions, and the Sergeant Major stands and goes, hey, General, you got to change this policy on tuition assistance because it's killing me. A young Marine gets to an infantry battalion after they've been in the Marine Corps 6 months, and they make a decision very quickly if they're going to go to school, they're going to work hard, or they're going to be in the drink two cases of beer on Saturday and Sunday night and play video games group. And because I can't give them tuition assistance, I don't have the ability to influence that choice. So I need you to change the policy. So Sergeant Major Green's there with me, and I'm like, okay, makes sense to me. What do you want it to be? I said, how about this? How about after 6 months, or after the Marine's there for 3 months, and this chain of command, his squad leader, his platoon sergeant, his platoon commander recommend, or I don't care how you do it, they recommend that Lance Corporal or PFC Rosales is squared away, and he wants to go to school. We're going to give him tuition assistance. And you guys decide. I don't care. I'm agnostic. I just got to make sure I got enough money to pay for it. And so that's what we did. Because it was a good idea. Not me. It was my idea. And it was better than the current policy. And because I wasn't, he gave me a different context of what was going on. I mean, I knew what was going on, but I didn't realize that the policy was inhibiting the Sergeant Major's ability to influence good Marines to stay to be good Marines. And I'm not saying those other Marines weren't good Marines. They just made a different choice. Now, would I rather have them in the weekend, you know, drinking two cases of beer and playing Call of Duty till 4 a.m? Or would I rather have him working on his online course, getting his bachelor's degree? You tell me.
No, I think that's a... I didn't realize that we had that. I didn't take advantage of it, but I actually, as I later in my career, one of the biggest things, and it's also something that I see you champion quite a bit, is education for, and not just military education, but education in general. Like you mentioned, guys, if you just want to do a couple of years, I really think we should push recruiting again. I think we've gone so long hearing a lot of the downsides of military service, and we've forgotten all of the opportunities and all of the benefits and all of the learning that can be done. Now, I also agree that it's not for everyone. And sometimes it's people getting there don't think it's for them, but when they get there, it is for them, if that makes any sense, right? Like, I don't think any of us served as long as we did or as short as we did for the organization, more for the people to our right and left, and wanting to kind of keep guiding them to progress and be better at their job. So I love the idea of educating Marines, more opportunities. Because, I mean, go ahead, sir. I just wanted to touch, because again, no, I know you have a really good point on education and why we should do it and how it benefits the military and the veterans. For the Marines themselves. So.
I mean, it's unfortunate. I think the other services are probably ahead of us. The Air Force, I would say, is the best. Because when I was at Marine Corps University, I figured out, like, it seems wrong that somebody would get out of the military without at least an associate degree in something. And to your point, I used to have, oh, the grunts are too busy. Wah, they don't have time. Yeah, they do. I mean, you got to, if you want to make the time, you'll find the time. And so I just got to create opportunity. And so I don't know what, I believe that's still the policy today, but tuition assistance, I mean, it used to be 50%, then it went to 75%, then it went to 100%. And that's before you even get out and take advantage of your 9/11 GI Bill. So, you know, I know there's a decrease in the number of people going to a brick and mortar university and getting a bachelor's degree or an engineering degree. And there's a lot of great opportunities out there in technical skills, you know, and our nation is hurting right now for people that can do stuff like weld, be electricians, be pipe fitters, just do the basic trades. And there's a good living to be made. I mean, it's hard work, but it's a good living to be made out there doing that. And so some of you just flashed up, I think, Jeff, the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation address. And the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation, which I'm on the board of, you know, provides scholarships to the children of Marines and sailors that serve with Marines to be able to get both, you know, normal bachelor's science degrees, but also for, you know, certifications in any trade. So if you're a Marine out there and you got kids that are getting ready to go to college and you meet the, and you meet that you have an honorable discharge and you meet the financial threshold, which is the, your pay is less equal to or less than that of the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, and your child gets into school, you should apply, they should apply for a scholarship. And there's a good chance they'll get some money. Or if you've been out there, you've been incredibly successful and you're wondering, as we get near the end of the calendar year and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do about your taxes, I would encourage you to donate money to the Marine Corps Scholarship Foundation and help the children of Marines, honor Marines by educating their kids, which is our logo. Thanks. I had to get that in. Sorry.
No, that's okay. As we get ready to kind of wind down this a little bit, I do want, since you mentioned transition, I have to say I do kind of dish on the Air Force a bit, but I am very impressed because they have a very incredible transition program. They are some of the most trained, well-trained professionals that I've served with. I'm curious, how can we improve that in the Marine Corps, General? Because we teach warfighting leadership, principles, culture. And don't get me wrong, there are some successful Marines, right? My former Secretary of the Navy, Ray Mabus, said over 100 CEOs, especially Fortune 500, were Marines, and most of them were on the enlisted side, right? So we have the leadership soft skills down, but what can we do to set up our Marines as they get out to be more successful?
That's a great question. A lot of it goes back, what, you know, Kat said was on, it's on them to some degree. I mean, they got to want to start preparing for transition. And it's hard to imagine, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to go home. You're going to go back to your home of record. You're going to go back with the same people you hung out with, which is maybe the reason you left in the first place. So the government, you know, the Department of Labor does the transition course. They give you information. There's job fairs, there's opportunities. I can tell you right now, just because I do some work with law enforcement around the country, that there's not a police force or a fire department or emergency service department in the United States of America that's at 100% staffing. Not one. So if you're interested in that type of work, they would love to have you if you decide to get out. The military would love to have you stay if you decide to stay. If you want to go to school and you've got your honorable discharge, you've got a four-year full ride in your pocket. There's all sorts of groups out there that will help you. Here in the state of Texas, and I don't think Texas is any different than anybody else, but although I think they might, they've got a great veterans assistance organization. And there's all sorts of groups out there at almost every major college or university in the country that has a veterans group that wants to help you. I mean, Texas A&M up in College Station has got a huge veterans outreach program for veterans that want to go to school there. And so my message is there's all sorts of people out there that want to help you transition. There's all, if you want to go to school or get a job, but you've got to go out there and you've got to connect. And your own network of people, whether you get on LinkedIn or you're on Instagram or whatever you use for your social media, there's people will find you if you put together what your skills are. Even if you were a 03XX, you did something. You understand, you know, certain mathematical things. You understand, you know, you understand mission. You understand focus. You can be trained. I don't think businesses are looking for people that are fully trained. They're looking for people that are trainable and are going to show up and work hard. And that's us. Now, it's not easy. I mean, it's hard. And it's never going to be the same. It's not the same. And I'm not being critical of the civilian society and culture. It's just different. And if you were in a unit, particularly one that was in combat or did some really hard stuff or some difficult situations, the cohesion and the friendships and the relationships, the intensity of that is difficult, I think, to replicate on the civilian side. So you're going to have to deal with that. But it doesn't mean that it's not doable. And there'll be other veterans out there. I mean, there isn't a city in this country that doesn't have a veterans business organization that you can contact. So what I guess my point is, you got to have a plan. You got to figure out kind of what you want to do. Am I going to get a job or am I going to go to school? Where am I going to live? And then go for it. You know, prosecute just like with extreme prejudice. You know, attack, locate, close with, and destroy the target with fire and maneuver and close combat, like we were taught. It's just a different objective. It's a job, it's training, it's education. And there will be people there to help you. I mean, if you call me, I'm reluctantly say this, but if you're willing, I know enough people, and I'm sure you do, if you called them up and said, hey, I got this guy or this gal that's getting out of pick a service, and they're going to, and they're moving to your area, can you get him a job? I'll get you a job. You may not like the job. You may not want to do the job. I'll get you a job. And, you know, just, I'm sure you drive around where you live in San Diego or other places. There's help wanted posters up all the time. And, you know, whether in the service industry, I mean, I fly a lot, so I'm looking out the window. There's a lot of people working at the airport. Somebody's hiring them. You know, the state, the city, law enforcement, I mentioned fire, emergency services. They are screaming for people that are qualified. And the military vet fits that profile perfectly.
I agree 100% with you, General. One of the things we talk about here a lot is how do we disrupt that veteran suicide homelessness population, especially it's, I feel like it's getting, there's been some improvements marginally, but I do think we've got to find a way to give them, like you said, more economic opportunities. Cause a lot of times folks miss that tribe. Folks are looking for that new mission and the new sense of purpose. And sometimes these opportunities may not give them that, right? So they keep searching. Any advice there?
You know, that's hard. I've struggled with the, you know, the myth out there is that the veteran is damaged from war and all that, but the great majority of people that have sadly taken their own lives are people that are young and they may not have ever gone anywhere or done anything which would cause, but everybody can have trauma in their life. I understand. A good friend of mine named Mike McNamara has a podcast called Post-Traumatic Winning, and he has a whole list of things that you should do or shouldn't do. I mean, the worst thing you can do is stop working out, stop taking care of yourself, start, you know, self-medicating, drinking too much, doing drugs. That's the worst, because that's just going to drive you into a hole. Avoid your friends. And I know Marines are out there, all Marines, soldiers, sailor, airmen, Coast Guard. They're out there all the time talking to their friends. So, I mean, we say look after each other. We still got to look after each other. But, you know, at some point, I mean, if somebody has an addiction and or some sort of mental health thing, you and I can't help them. I don't mean to be crude or cruel, but we have to get them in help, got to get them in some sort of help. And if they're not willing to do that, their families, I know one of where the mother of a Marine officer who I went to high school with reached out to me to try to help her son who is having issues, and they brought him home, they put him in treatment, and he wasn't interested. And one of his best buddies from serving together tried to help him, and maybe he hasn't gotten to where he realizes he's got to get some help. So to anybody out there struggling, I just tell you, your veteran family out there is willing to help you. The VA, I got nothing bad to say about the VA. They're kind of big and clunky, and they can be, but the VA is there. They will help you. There's people out there will help you with the VA. There's all sorts of organizations around where you live. You just got to go find them and say, hey, I need some help. And they will help you. They will. But they can't help you if they don't know where you are and what's going on.
Thank you. Lakeisha or Kat, any final questions or comments?
I think it's fascinating to learn about another part of the military. I still don't know what a commandant is, but it sounds very prestigious.
I'm like the chief of staff of the Air Force.
How's that? Well, see, there you go. I knew it was something. It was up there.
General, don't downgrade. He was the CEO of the Marine Corps, Cat. All right. The father of the Marine Corps is Samuel Nicholas. We were born in a bar on 10 November 1775.
Yeah, the bar.
General Neller was the CEO. Go ahead, General.
So that bar thing can be a problem sometimes.
Yeah, Cat. I digress on that. Joe, any final questions or comments?
I just want to, sir, just thank you for coming today. And also, I want to say I agree with you that we need to share the idea of getting young people to really look at the military as an opportunity again. I think we've missed the boat, and we've kind of shared too much negativity of processes, but I think there's still value. There's still a lot of good stuff that's come out of it. Like, if people were to ask me, would you do it again? I would be like, yes, like without a doubt. Like the amazing people and just the lessons learned are invaluable. So, and I know that's a huge message that you share at every place you go when you speak. So thank you for that. And I think we need to continue that. Thank you, sir, for your time and Semper Fi.
General, thank you again for coming on. Any final questions? Any final thoughts from your end that you want to leave us with, or anything you want to talk about? Maybe what's kind of like the legacy you want to leave, sir? Any goals you got coming up? We'd love to hear of them.
People asked me when I was getting ready to retire, what did I want my legacy to be? And I never really... You know, it's interesting. I see things that we started back, you know, it's like anybody. You start, things take time in the government. Sometimes they take longer than you want, always take longer than you want. But things, you know, like Marines flying Predators and getting, you know, anti-ship coastal defense cruise missiles and, you know, autonomy and robotics and all the great gear we got to the ground combat element and different things. And that, you know, we're the Marine Corps, like all the services, we got to continue to get better, because there's our adversaries out there are not sitting there, you know, on their hands. They know what their competition is, and we need to be paying attention to that. So what my legacy, I think any leader would want their legacy to be that people that they serve with believe that they actually cared about them and that they gave a crap. I mean, the worst thing I think you can say about a leader is, well, they don't care about me and they don't care about the organization. They're all about themselves. So if that's what people think about me, that I'm, you know, that I cared about them, or I cared about the Marine Corps and I tried to do stuff that was good for the team, you know, that would be the highest compliment anybody could pay to me. And that's not for me to say, that's for other people to decide. But I appreciate what you guys are all doing to try to help vets and to help people improve, get better training, get better education, be better citizens, be better stewards for the nation. You know, the truth is, I mean, there's some vets out there struggling, but the great, great, great majority of the vets are doing great stuff. You know, they took advantage of the opportunity, whether they serve 4 or 40, they got educated, they're raising a family, they're paying their taxes, they got good jobs, they're following the laws. I mean, it's great. And for those, you know, congratulations and thanks. But, you know, we can't forget those that are still struggling, and we just got to kind of grab them to the best of our ability and help them if they're willing to be helped, and get them on a better path. But I appreciate what you guys are doing, and thanks for the opportunity to be with you today. Have a good
General
day.
General Neller, you too. General, thank you so much for joining us today. God bless you and your family in America, and Semper Fidelis, sir.
Hoorah.
Hoorah.